throw rug over her. Luke smiled at Clary as she came in, and he pointed toward the kitchen, making a bizarre gesture that Clary translated as an indication that there was food in there if she wanted it. She nodded and tiptoed up the stairs, careful not to wake her mother. She went into her room, already pulling off her coat. It took her a moment to realize that there was someone else there. The room was chilly, the cold air pouring in through the half-open window. On the windowsill sat Isabel. She wore high boots zipped over her jeans, her hair was loose, blowing slightly in the breeze. She looked over at Clary as she came in the room and smiled tightly. Clary went over to the window and pulled herself up beside Izzy. There was enough room for both of them, but barely. The toes of her shoes nudged up against Izzy's leg. She folded her hands over her knees and waited.
"Sorry," Isabel said finally. "I probably should have come in through the front door, but I didn't want to deal with your parents."
"Was everything okay at the council meeting?" Clary asked. "Did something happen?" Isabel laughed shortly. "Fairies agreed to the Clave's terms."
"Well, that's good, right?"
"Maybe." Magnus didn't seem to think so. Isabel exhaled.
"It just... there were nasty, pointy, angry bits sticking out everywhere. It didn't seem like a victory. And they're sending Helen Blackthorne to Wrangle Island to study the wards. Get that, they want to get her away because she's got fairy blood."
"It's horrible, what about Aline?"
"Aline's going with her, she told Alec," Isabel said. "There's some uncle that's coming to take care of the Blackthorne kids and the girl, the one who likes you and Jace."
"Her name's Emma," Clary said, poking Isabel's leg with her toe.
"You could try to remember it, she did help us out."
"Yeah, it's a little hard for me to be grateful right now." Isabel ran her hands down her denim-clad legs and took a deep breath. "I know there was no other way it could have played out. I keep trying to imagine one, but I can't think of anything. We had to go after Sebastian, and we had to get out of Edom, or we all would have died anyway. But I just miss Simon. I miss him all the time, and I came here because you're the only one who misses him as much as I do."
Clary stilled. Isabel was playing with the red stone at her throat, staring out the window with the sort of fixed stare Clary was familiar with. It was the kind of stare that said, "I'm trying not to cry."
"I know," Clary said. "I miss him all the time too, just in a different way. Feels like waking up missing an arm or a leg, like there's something that's always been there that I relied on, and now it's gone."
Isabel was still staring out the window.
"Tell me about the phone call," she said.
"I don't know," Clary hesitated. "It was bad, Iz. I don't think you really want to..."
"Tell me," Isabel said through her teeth, and Clary sighed and nodded.
It wasn't as if she didn't remember. Every second of what had happened was burned into her brain. It had been 3 days after they had come back. 3 days during which all of them had been quarantined. No Shadowhunter had survived a trip to a demon dimension before, and the Silent Brothers had wanted to be absolutely sure that they were carrying no dark magic with them. It had been 3 days of Clary screaming at the Silent Brothers that she wanted her Steely, she wanted a portal, she wanted to see Simon, she wanted someone to just check on him and make sure he was all right. She hadn't seen Isabel or any of the others during those days, not even her mother or Luke. But they must have done their own fair share of screaming, because the moment they had all been cleared by the brothers, a guard had appeared and guided Clary to the consul's office. Inside the office of the consul, in the guard on top of Guard Hill, was the only working telephone in Alicante. It had been enchanted to work sometime around the turn of the century by the warlock Ragnar Fell, a little before the development of fire messages. It had survived various attempts to remove it on the theory that it might disrupt the wards, as it had shown no sign of ever doing so. The only other person in the room was Gia Penhallow, and she gestured for Clary to sit. "Magnus Bane has informed me about what happened with your friend Simon Lewis in the demon realms," she said. "I wish to say that I am sorry for your loss."
"He isn't dead," Clary ground out through her teeth. "At least he isn't supposed to be. Has anyone bothered to check? Has anyone looked to see if he's all right?"
"Yes," Gia said, rather unexpectedly. "He is fine, living at home with his mother and sister. He seems entirely well, No longer a vampire, of course, but simply a mundane, living a very ordinary life. He appears from observation to have no recollection of the shadow world. Clary flinched, then straightened up. I just want to talk to him. Gia thinned her lips. You know the law. You cannot tell a mundane about the shadow world unless he is in danger. You cannot reveal the truth, Clary. Magnus said the demon who freed you told you as much. The demon who freed you. So Magnus hadn't mentioned it was his father, not that Clary blamed him. She wouldn't reveal his secret either. I won't tell Simon anything, all right? I just want to hear his voice. I need to know he's okay. Gia sighed and pushed the phone toward her. Clary grabbed it, wondering how you dialed out of Idris. How did they pay their phone bills? Then decided, screw it. She was just going to dial as if she were in Brooklyn already. If that didn't work, she could ask for guidance. To her surprise, the phone rang and was picked up almost immediately, the familiar voice of Simon's mother echoing down the line. Hello? Hello? The receiver almost slipped in Clary's hand. Her palm was damp with sweat. Simon there? What? Oh, yes, he's in his room, said Elaine. Can I tell him who's calling? Clary closed her eyes. It's Clary. There was a short silence, and then Elaine said, I'm sorry, who? Clary Frey. She tasted bitter metal in the back of her throat. I go to St. Xavier's. It's about our English homework. Oh, well, all right then, said Elaine. I'll go get him. She put the phone down and Clary waited. Waited for the woman who had thrown Simon out her house and called him a monster. Had left him to throw up blood on his knees in the gutter to go and see if he would pick up a phone call like a normal teenager. It wasn't her fault. It was the mark of Cain acting on her without her knowledge, turning Simon into a wanderer, cutting him away from his family, Clary told herself. But it didn't stop the burn of anger and anxiety flooding her veins. She heard Elaine's footsteps going away, the murmur of voices, more footsteps. Hello? Simon's voice, and Clary almost dropped the phone. Her heart was pounding itself into pieces. She could picture him so clearly, skinny and brown-haired, propping himself against the table in the narrow hallway just past the Lewis's front door. Simon, she said. Simon, it's me, it's Clary. There was a pause. When he spoke again, he sounded bewildered. Do we know each other? Each word felt like a nail being pounded into her skin. We have English class together, she said, which was true enough in a way. They had had most of their classes together when Clary had still gone to mundane high school. Mr. Price? Oh, right. He sounded not unfriendly, cheerful enough, but baffled. I'm really sorry, I have a total mental block for faces and names. What's up? Mom said it was something about homework, but I don't think we had any homework tonight. Can I ask you something? Clary said. About A Tale of Two Cities? He sounded amused. Look, I haven't read it yet. I like the more modern stuff. Catch 22, The Catcher in the Rye, anything with catch in the title, I guess. He was flirting a little, Clary thought. He must have thought she'd called him up out of the blue because she thought he was cute. Some random girl at school whose name he didn't even know. Who's your best friend? She asked. Your best friend in the whole world? He was silent for a moment, then laughed. I should have guessed this was about Eric, he said. You know, if you wanted his phone number, you could have just asked him. Clary hung the phone up and sat staring at it as if it were a poison snake. She was aware of Gia's voice asking her if she was all right, asking what happened. But she didn't answer. She just set her jaw, absolutely determined not to cry in front of the consul. You don't think maybe he was just faking it? Isabel said now. Pretending he didn't know who you were, you know, because it would be dangerous? Clary hesitated. Simon's voice had been so blithe, so banal, so completely ordinary. Nobody could fake that. I'm totally sure, she said. He doesn't remember us, he can't. Izzy looked away from the window, and Clary could see the tears standing in her eyes. I want to tell you something, Isabel said. And I don't want you to hate me. I couldn't hate you, Clary said. Not possible. It's almost worse, Isabel said, than if he were dead. If he were dead, I could grieve, but I don't know what to think. He's safe, he's alive, I should be grateful. He isn't a vampire anymore, and he hated being a vampire. I should be happy, but I'm not happy. He told me he loved me. He told me he loved me, Clary, and now he doesn't even know who I am. If I was standing in front of him, he wouldn't recognize my face. It feels like I never mattered. None of it ever mattered or ever happened. He never loved me at all. She swiped angrily at her face. I hate it, she broke out suddenly. I hate this feeling, like there's something sitting on my chest. Missing someone? Yes, Isabel said. I never thought I'd feel it about some boy. Not some boy, Clary said. Simon, and he did love you, and it did matter. Maybe he doesn't remember, but you do, I do. The Simon who's living in Brooklyn now, that's Simon the way he used to be 6 months ago. And that's not a terrible thing. He was wonderful. But he changed when you knew him. He got stronger, and he got hurt, and he was different. And that Simon was the one you fell in love with, and who fell in love with you. So you are grieving because he's gone. But you can keep him alive a little by remembering him. We both can. Isabel made a choking sound. I hate losing people, she said, and there was a savage edge to her voice. The desperation of someone who had lost too much too young. I hate it. Clary put her hand out and took Izzy's. A thin right hand, the one with the voyant runes stretched across her knuckles. I know, Clary said. But remember the people you've gained, too. I've gained you. I'm grateful for that. She pressed Izzy's hand hard, and for a moment there was no response. Then Isabel's fingers tightened on hers. They sat in silence on the windowsill, their hands locked across the distance between them. Maya sat on the couch in the apartment, her apartment now. Being pack leader paid a small salary, and she had decided to use it for rent, to keep what once had been Jordan and Simon's place, keep their things from being thrown into the street by an angry evicting landlord. Eventually, she would go through their belongings, pack up what she could, sort through the memories, exorcise the ghosts. For today, though, she was content to sit and look at what had arrived for her from Idris in a small package from Gia Penhallow. The consul hadn't thanked her for the warning she'd been given, though she had welcomed her as the new and permanent leader of the New York pack. Her tone had been cool and distant, but wrapped in the letter was a bronze seal, the seal of the head of the Praetor Lupus, the seal with which the Scott family had always signed their letters. It had been retrieved from the ruins on Long Island. There was a small note attached with two words written on it in Gia's careful hand. Begin again. You're going to be all right, I promise. It was probably the 600th time that Helen had said the same thing, Emma thought. It would probably have helped if she didn't sound more like she was trying to convince herself. Helen was nearly finished packing the belongings that she had brought to Idris. Uncle Arthur, he had told Emma to call him that too, had promised to send on the rest. He was waiting downstairs with Aline to escort Helen to the guard, where she would take the portal to Wrangel Island. Aline would follow her the next week, after the last of the treaties and votes in Alicante. It all sounded boring and complicated and horrible to Emma. All she knew was that she was sorry for ever having thought that Helen and Aline were soppy. Helen didn't seem soppy to her at all now. Just sad, her eyes red-rimmed and her hands shaking as she zipped up her bag and turned to the bed. It was an enormous bed, big enough for six people. Julian was sitting up against the headboard on one side and Emma was on the other. You could have fit the rest of the family between them, Emma thought, but Drew, the twins, and Tavi were asleep in their rooms. Drew and Livy were cried out. Tiberius had accepted the news of Helen's departure with wide-eyed confusion, as if he didn't know what was happening or how he was expected to respond. At the last, he'd shaken her hand and solemnly wished her good luck, as if she were a colleague leaving on a business trip. She'd burst into tears. "Oh, Ty," she said, and he'd slunk away, looking horrified. Helen knelt down now, bringing herself almost eye-level with Jules where he sat on the bed. Remember what I said, okay? We're going to be all right,
Julian parroted. Helen squeezed his hand.
I hate leaving you, she said. I'd take care of you if I could, you know that, right? I'd take over the Institute, I love you all so much.
Julian squirmed in the manner that only a 12-year-old boy could squirm upon hearing the word love.
I know, he managed. The only reason I can leave is that I'm sure I'm leaving you all in good hands, she said, her eyes boring into his.
Uncle Arthur, you mean?
I mean you, she said, and Jules' eyes widened. I know it's a lot to ask, she added. But I also know I can depend on you. I know you can help Drew with her nightmares and take care of Livia and Tavi, and maybe even Uncle Arthur can do that too. He's a nice enough man, absent-minded, but he seems to want to try.
A voice trailed off.
But Ty is... she sighed. Ty is special. He translates the world differently from how the rest of us do. Not everyone can speak his language, but you can. Take care of him for me, all right? He's going to be something amazing. We just have to keep the clay from understanding how special he is. They don't like people who are different. She finished, and there was a bitterness in her tone.
Julian was sitting up straight now, looking worried.
Ty hates me, he said. He fights me all the time.
Ty loves you, said Helen. He sleeps with that bee you gave him. He watches you all the time. He wants to be like you. He's just...
It's hard, she finished, not sure how to say what she wanted to.
That Ty was jealous of the way Julian so easily navigated the world, so easily made people love him. That what Julian did every day without thinking seemed to Ty like a magic trick.
Sometimes it's hard when you want to be like someone but you don't know how.
A sharp furrow of confusion appeared between Julian's brows, but he looked up at Helen and nodded.
I'll take care of Ty, he said. I promise.
Good. Helen stood up and kissed Julian quickly on the top of his head.
Because he's amazing and special. You all are.
She smiled over his head at Emma.
You too, Emma,
she said, and her voice tightened on Emma's name as if she was going to cry. She closed her eyes, hugged Julian one more time, and fled out of the room, grabbing her suitcase and coat as she went. Emma could hear her running downstairs and then the front door closing amid a murmur of voices. Emma looked over at Julian. He was sitting rigidly upright, his chest rising and falling as if he'd been running. She reached over quickly and took his hand, traced onto the inside of his palm.
W-H-A-T-S-W-R-O-N-G.
You heard Helen, he said in a low voice. She trusts me to take care of them. Drew, Tavi, Livy, Ty, my whole family, basically. I'm 12, Emma, and I'm going to have 4 kids.
Anxiously, she started to write. N-O-Y-O-U-W-O-N-T.
You don't have to do that, he interrupted. It's not like there are any parents to overhear us. It was an unusually bitter thing for Jules to say, and Emma swallowed hard.
I know, she said finally, but I like having a secret language with you. I mean, who else can we talk about this stuff with if we don't talk to each other?
He slumped down against the headboard, turning to face her.
The truth is, I don't know Uncle Arthur at all. I've only seen him at holidays. I know Helen says she does, and he's great and fine and everything, but they're my brothers and sisters. I know them. He doesn't.
He curled his hands into fists. I'll take care of them. I'll make sure they have everything they want, and nothing ever gets taken away from them again.
Emma reached for his arm, and this time he gave it to her, letting his eyes fall half-closed as she wrote on the inside of his wrist with her index finger. I-L-L-H-E-L-P-Y-O-U.
He smiled at her, but she could see the tension behind his eyes.
I know you will, he said.
He reached his hand out and clasped it around hers. You know the last thing Mark said to me before he was taken? He asked, leaning against the headboard. He looked absolutely exhausted.
He said, stay with Emma.
So we'll stay with each other, because that's what Parabatai do. Emma felt as if the breath had been pulled out of her lungs. Parabatai. It was a big word for shadow hunters, one of the biggest, encompassing one of the most intense emotions you could ever have, the most significant commitment you could ever make to another person that wasn't about romantic love or marriage.
She had wanted to tell Jules when they got back to the house, had wanted to tell him somehow that when she had burst out with the words in the consul's office that they were going to be Parabatai bonded, it had been about more than wanting to be his Parabatai.
"Tell him," said a little voice in her head. "Tell him you did it because you needed to stay in Los Angeles. Tell him you did it because you need to be there to find out what happened to your parents. To get revenge." "Julian," she said softly, but he didn't move. His eyes were closed, his dark lashes feathering against his cheeks. The moonlight coming in through the window outlined him in white and silver. The bones of his face were already beginning to sharpen, to lose the softness of childhood. She could suddenly imagine how he was going to look when he was older, broader and rangier, a grown-up Julian. He was going to be so handsome, she thought. Girls would be all over him. And one of them would take him away from her forever, because Emma was his Parabatai. That meant she could never be one of those girls now. She could never love him like that. Jules murmured and shifted in his fitful sleep. His arm was stretched out towards her, his fingers not quite touching her shoulder. His sleeve was rucked up to his elbow. She reached out her hand and carefully scrawled on the bare skin of his forearm, where the skin was pale and tender, unmarked yet by any scars. "I am S-O-S-O-R-R-Y-J-U-L-E-S, she wrote, and then sat back, holding her breath. But he didn't feel it, and he didn't wake up. Epilogue. The Beauty of a Thousand Stars. May 2008. The air was beginning to show the first warm promise of summer. The sun shone hot and bright down on the corner of Carroll Street and 6th Avenue, and the trees that lined the brownstoned block were thick with green leaves. Clary had stripped off her light jacket on the way out of the subway and stood in her jeans and tank top across from the entrance to St. Xavier's, watching as the doors opened and the students streamed out onto the pavement. Isabel and Magnus lounged against the tree opposite her, Magnus in a velvet jacket and jeans and Isabel in a short silver party dress that showed her marks. Clary supposed her own marks were pretty visible too. All up and down her arms, at her belly where the tank top rode up, on the back of her neck. Some permanent, some temporary. All of them marking her out as different. Not just different from the students milling around the school's entrance, exchanging their goodbyes for the day, making plans to walk to the park or to meet up later at Java Jones, but different from the self she had once been. The self who had been one of them. An older woman with a poodle and a pillbox hat was whistling her way down the street in the sunshine. The poodle waddled over to the tree where Isabel and Magnus were leaning. The old woman paused, whistling. Isabel, Clary, and Magnus were completely invisible to her. Magnus gave the poodle a ferocious glare and it backed off with a whimper, half dragging its owner down the street. Magnus looked after them. "Invisibility glamours do have their drawbacks," he remarked. Isabel quirked a smile, which disappeared, almost immediately. Her voice when she spoke was tight with repressed feeling. "There he is." Clary's head snapped up. The school doors had opened again and three boys had stepped out onto the front stairs. She recognized them even from across the street. Kirk, Eric, and Simon. Nothing had changed about Eric or Kirk. She felt the far-sighted rune on her arm spark as her eyes skipped over them. She stared at Simon, drinking in every detail. It had been December when she'd seen him last, pale and dirty and bloody in the demon realm. Now he was aging, getting older, no longer frozen in time. His hair had gotten longer. It fell over his forehead, down the back of his neck. He had color in his cheeks. He stood with one foot up on the bottom step of the stairs. His body thin and angular as always, maybe a little more filled out than she had remembered him. He wore a faded blue shirt that he'd had for years. He pushed up the frames of his square-rimmed glasses as he gestured animatedly with his other hand, in which he held a wad of rolled-up papers. Without taking her eyes off him, Clary fumbled her steely out of her pocket and drew on her arm, cancelling out her glamour runes. She heard Magnus mutter something about being more careful. If anyone had been looking, they would have seen her suddenly pop into existence between the trees. Nobody seemed to be, though.
and Clary stuffed the Steely back in her pocket. Her hand was shaking.
"Good luck," Isabel said without asking her what she was doing.
Clary supposed it was obvious. Isabel was still leaning back against the tree. She looked drawn and tense, her back very straight. Magnus was busy twirling a blue topaz ring on his left hand. He just winked at Clary as she stepped off the curb. Isabel would never go talk to Simon, Clary thought, starting across the street. She would never risk the blank look, the lack of recognition. She would never endure the evidence that she had been forgotten. Clary wondered if she wasn't some kind of masochist, to throw herself into the path of it herself. Kirk had wandered off, but Eric saw her before Simon did. She tensed for a moment, but it was clear his memory of her had been wiped away too. He gave her a confused, appreciative look, clearly wondering if she was heading toward him. She shook her head and pointed her chin at Simon. Eric raised an eyebrow and gave Simon a "later, man" clap on the shoulder before making himself scarce. Simon turned to look at Clary, and she felt it like a punch to the stomach. He was smiling, brown hair blowing across his face. He used his free hand to push it back. "Hi," she said, coming to a stop in front of him. "Simon." Dark brown eyes shadowed by confusion, he stared at her.
Do we know each other?"
She swallowed back the sudden bitter tang in her mouth. "We used to be friends," she said, and then clarified. "It was a long time ago. Kindergarten." Simon raised a doubtful eyebrow.
"I must have been a really charming 6-year-old if you still remember me."
"I do remember you," she said. "I remember your mom, Elaine, and your sister, Rebecca, too. Rebecca used to let us play with her Hungry Hungry Hippos game, but you ate all the marbles."
Simon had gone a little pale under his slight tan. That did happen, but I was alone," he said, his voice shading past bewilderment into something else.
"No, you weren't." She searched his eyes, willing him to remember something. "I'm telling you, we were friends."
I guess I don't remember," he said slowly, though there were shadows, a darkness in his already dark eyes that made her wonder.
"My mom's getting married," she said. "Tonight. I'm on my way there, actually." He rubbed his temple with his free hand.
"And you need a date to the wedding?"
"No, I have one." She couldn't tell if he looked disappointed or just more confused, as if the only logical reason he could imagine for her to be talking to him had disappeared. She could feel her cheeks burning. Somehow, embarrassing herself like this was harder than facing down a gaggle of Hoosa demons in Glick Park. She ought to know she'd done it the night before.
You and my mom used to be close. I thought you should know. It's an important day, and if things were right, then you would have been there."
Simon swallowed. "I'm sorry."
"It's not your fault," she said. "It was never your fault. Not any of it." She leaned up on her tiptoes, the back of her eyelids burning, and kissed him quickly on the cheek. "Be happy," she said, and turned away. She could see the blurred figures of Isabel and Magnus waiting for her across the street.
"Wait!"
She turned. Simon had hurried after her. He was holding something out. A flyer he'd pulled from the rolled stack he was carrying.
"My band," he said half apologetically. "You should come to a show, maybe, sometime."
She took the flyer with a silent nod and dashed back across the street. She could feel him staring after her, but she couldn't bear to turn around and see the look on his face. Half confusion and half pity. Isabel detached herself from the tree as Clary hurtled toward them. Clary slowed down just enough to retrieve her steely and slash the glamouroon back into her arm. It hurt, but she welcomed the sting.
"You were right," she said to Magnus. "That was pointless."
"I didn't say it was pointless."
He spread his hands wide.
"I said he wouldn't remember you. I said that you should do it only if you were okay with that."
"I'll never be okay with it," Clary snapped, and then took a deep, hard breath.
"I'm sorry," she said.
"I'm sorry, it's not your fault, Magnus. And Izzy, that can't have been fun for you either. Thank you for coming with me."
Magnus shrugged. "No need to apologize, Biscuit."
Isabel's dark eyes scanned Clary quickly. She reached out a hand.
"What's that?"
"Band flyer," Clary said and shoved it toward Isabel.
Isabel took it with an arched eyebrow.